So in this beautiful text called Meditation and Life, we find that the teacher has covered all details pertaining to meditation, the technique, the benefits, what is meditation, what should I meditate on, what is my goal. Everything has been covered, and we are today going to do the 29th chapter. So we have mostly covered the book. For somebody who is new, you can go through the book also. I can give you the website at the end if you want to listen to the previous talks. Tony has been putting them on the website, so most of them know. It's called firstpower.info, but I'll give it to you so you can listen to previous talks. Also, we have some guided meditations that you can practice. So after having covered all aspects of meditation, the most important thing has been given to the I, but not I the perceiver, feeler, and thinker, not I who is Anil or Tony or Penny, but I the consciousness, the Lord's presence, Om. I think everybody is familiar. You're familiar with this BMI chart. So the consciousness, that is my true nature, and that is unattached, that is pure, that is immortal, that is the Lord within and without, and that is covered in very much detail in this text. The last section of the book, which is in my opinion is very, very important, is talks about the mind. And the topic today is the subjective conquest. So you should read this chapter when you go home, because the teacher has covered it beautifully. But I'll cover some of the highlights and some of my own ideas and some examples, and then you're welcome to read this at home. So they say the mind is the greatest obstacle in meditation, and you all will agree, when you sit for meditation, that's when the mind runs the most. And anything and everything that I should not think comes in when I sit for meditation. And that is a universal problem. And so the mind is the obstacle, and the mind has to be tamed, has to be conquered, has to be controlled, but not as an enemy, but as a friend. But firm control of the mind is required. And why does the mind run out? Because it is attached to objects. Our mind is an extrovert. So I get attached to objects that I have seen, or I have heard, or I have acquired. My house, my car, my dog, my husband, my wealth, my stock market, whatever is the topic of the day that is disturbing me, the mind runs into that. Or into emotions. This person loves me, this person doesn't love me, this person said, you know, I love you, this person said I didn't. Or the mind gets attached to concepts, ideas. You know, I am right and he's wrong, and Republicans are good and Democrats are bad, or whatever, you know, these people of this religion. So whatever concepts we get attached to, so the mind gets attached to objects and runs outward. And that is the biggest problem. Not only when we sit for meditation, but throughout the day, my mind is disturbed as long as it is attached. As long as my mind is attached. By unattached, we do not mean that you don't love, that you don't love your spouse or your children or your dog or your country or your... Attachment is I plus I want. I want. If I want something to make me complete, that is attachment. The attitude should be, yes, I love everybody, I love everything, but suppose tomorrow something is not in my life, I am still okay. That is called unattached. If I have it, it's good. If I don't have it, I'm still fine. Why? Because I am the immortal consciousness. So this attitude of completeness, that I do not need something else or somebody else to make me complete, is very important. And that's what we have to develop as spiritual seekers. It does not mean you are not sensitive. See, people get the idea that a spiritual seeker is as cold as a rock. You know, nothing bothers him, heat or cold or love. No. In fact, the more you evolve spiritually, the softer you get. You get more sensitive. You become more loving, and you become more in tune with the feelings of others, with the emotions of others. situations. Not that people can disturb you, but inside you feel more connected with people. At the same time, there is an inner feeling of contentment. I'm peace, that I am fine. If this person is in my life, I'm fine. If this person tomorrow is not in my life, I'm still fine. If I have this object, I'm fine. If I don't have. So this attitude of completeness. And why am I complete? Because the Lord is with me. The Lord is within me. So how do I need anything else to make me complete? So that, how do we practice that in meditation? They say, be a witness. And as we have talked before, what is a witness? A witness is somebody who saw an incident happening and then testifies in the court, yes, Your Honor, I saw this. But he or she is not involved. If he or she is a friend of the defendant or the friend of the prosecutor, then they cannot be a reliable witness. So a witness is one who saw the incident but was themselves not involved. So that's what I have to become, that I see the mind, I witness the mind. In meditation, when we sit for meditation, after you have done the initial steps, you know, relaxed your body, watched your breath, chanted your mantra, Om. And then when the mind starts running, you just become a witness and you say, okay, I'm watching the mind. And the moment you start watching the mind, it becomes quiet. A watched mind is a quiet mind. And what is a quiet mind? A quiet mind is the one that is not running into the world of objects. So you watch the mind. The moment the mind runs out, you say, okay, this is not the time to think of my children, my husband, my wife, my work, my this, that, whatever objects. But this is the time to spend with the Lord within. So I am with myself in meditation. So bring the mind. There's a beautiful expression I heard. Bring the mind back into the body. So at this moment, I'm aware of my body and my mind should be with me. Mind should not be going out into other things. So that's a very beautiful expression. Bring the mind within the body. Because our mind has a tendency to run in all different directions. And so a quiet mind is a pure mind. What do we mean by pure mind? Mind that is not agitated, that is not disturbed, that is not full of negativity. So a mind that is full of anger, greed, or jealousy is an impure mind. A mind that is disturbed, that is agitated. Disturbance could be from anywhere. Disturbance could be from the world. Or disturbance could be from within. It could be from elements. Okay, there is an earthquake or a tornado or a flood. Or disturbance most of the time is from our near and dear ones. People who are close to me, that's the source. Or disturbance from within. So all those have to be controlled, especially the disturbance from within. So a mind that is agitated is an impure mind. And also a mind that is selfish. That is I plus I want, as I said in the beginning. So as you make your mind more unselfish, more giving, more loving, more compassionate, it becomes purer, it becomes quieter. Then the point they bring up is, as the mind, so the world. As your mind, so the world. You say, oh, what do you mean by that? How, I cannot change the world by changing my mind? You can. Definitely you can. And I'll give a simple story which illustrates how the same object is looked at differently by different people. So there are four people who walk into a garden. And they see a beautiful red rose in full bloom with a perfume, very pretty, one red rose. Of course, there are other flowers, but this is the striking flower. So therefore, one is a poet, one is an artist, one is a botanist, and one is a lover. I think I might have told this story. If not, it's worth repeating, but if you have not heard it, it's good. So the four walk in, and there are four people, and this beautiful red rose. And the artist takes out his paper and starts drawing and painting and coloring. Wow, beautiful rose. And the poet composes a beautiful poem in praise of the rose. Oh, rose, you are so beautiful and you are so red and all that. You know, I mean, I'm not a poet, but he does that. A beautiful poetry. The botanist, what does he do? He plucks the rose, breaks it, and looks at the stamen and the, because he's analyzing what is the rose made of. It is the stamen and the root and the flower and the petals and all the, you know, different things. And the lover starts crying. So the painter is painting, the poet is writing a poetry, the botanist is destroying the rose, and the lover is crying. So they say, why are you crying? Just looking at a rose. He says, you know, 5.5 years ago, I gave my wife, not my wife, my beloved, I gave my beloved a dozen such red roses. And I told her, I love you. And she told me she doesn't love me anymore. And she returned the bouquet. And since then, I've been crying 5.5 years. Every time I see a red rose, I start crying. So the rose is the same. But depending on my mental makeup, the poet looks at it differently, the artist, the botanist, and the lover. So similarly, the world that we live in is the same. For one person, the world is, it's wonderful. It's so much joy. World is so nice. And another person, world is so bad. I am so sad. If you are happy, the world looks great. And if you are unhappy, the same world looks very sad. Like if it's raining, and a person who is happy says, look, the Lord, the gods are blessing us with the rain. And the one who is sad, he says, I am crying and heavens are also crying. So the same rain, one person looks at it as a blessing. Another person looks at it as tears. So they say, as your mind, so the world. So if you want to make yourself happy, you just control the mind and fill the mind with positivity. You cannot change the world. You cannot. Our problem is that we go around changing people. Only if such a person changed, I would be happy. If my husband only, if he changed, I would be so happy. Or my teenager, or my boss, or my co-worker, or my child. You know, only if my child would listen to me. Or if it was not so cold in Bakersfield, it would be nice. And then in July, we'll say, if it was not so hot in Bakersfield, it would be nice. So we try to change the circumstances. You cannot. All you can do is change yourself. That's why Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda says, change yourself and the world will change. Just change yourself. Do not try to change the world. And in the book, there's a very good example. It says you cannot cover the whole world with leather. There will be stones, there will be thorns, there will be sharp objects. All you can do is wear shoes. You wear shoes, then the world can be whatever it is. It can be sharp, it can be thorns, it can be stones, it can be glass. If I have strong, sturdy shoes, I cannot, don't have to make the cover the whole world with leather. Such a beautiful example. So make your mind strong. Let not your mind become a slave to objects, slave to situations. And how do we do that? They say my M plus I. Control your mind with your intellect. Which intellect? The intellect that has the right knowledge, spiritual knowledge acquired from the Lord, from the scriptures, and from the Guru. So the right knowledge, when the intellect has, then and then only it can control the mind. And a controlled mind, which is directed inward, is not running out, is what we need. So one of the very important point is give up the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. That I am the perceiver, I am the feeler, I am the thinker. So when I sit for meditation, you say, I am meditating, and I am meditating upon God, and I am Anil, or I am John, and I am sitting here. None of that. I am a seeker of truth. I am neither male nor female. I am neither Indian nor American. Neither I am white nor black. I am a seeker of truth. So give up that. And as you quieten your mind, you will after a time find that there is no mind. The mind ends and I also end. In the deep silence of meditation, even the meditator, the one who is meditating in that complete silence, ends, and that is the final goal. But it will happen gradually. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen today or tomorrow. Meditation, because we have developed certain habits of thinking over 30 years or 40 years or 50 years. And then when we start meditation in 2 weeks, you know, we want miraculous results. It's like you learn to play golf. You cannot become a champion golfer in 2 weeks, or you cannot become a doctor in 2 weeks, or you cannot become a computer programmer in 2 weeks. You cannot climb Mount Everest in 2 weeks. But meditation, we give 2 weeks, didn't help me. Or 2 months. It takes years of gradual practice. So that is so it gradually you practice and you conquer the mind. When you conquer the mind, it again does not mean that you fight with the mind, but you gently control the mind, alertly watch the mind. They say quiet, alert, and vigilant. Be very quiet in the mind and be alert and vigilant and do not let the mind go out. The moment the mind goes out, you bring it back. Moment it goes out. But one has to be very alert because you think, oh, my meditation is going so good and my mind is so quiet. And then suddenly, before you know it, mind has taken off somewhere and you are gone with the mind. And then 10 minutes later, you say, what happened? I was meditating. The alarm goes off. Your time for meditation is over. And instead of meditating on the Lord, we are meditating on something else. Maybe my dog, maybe my work, maybe. At that time, there is nothing else except the Lord. So the mind has to go towards what it loves. And that is very important. I have to love this process of meditation. I have to love the Lord within. And each one of us has what we call as an Isht Devta, or a particular form of God that I love, that I cherish. Of course, God is formless. It's the consciousness is all pervading. It is everywhere. It is there in the chair. It is there in the mic. It is there in me, you, in the animals, birds, plants, and is formless. But it is very difficult to love a formless God. They say, okay, think about God that is formless. It's very difficult. Love a God that is formless. It's not easy. Yes, in the higher states of meditation, where your mind becomes quiet, then you become one with that formless. But at the level that we are, we need to develop a relationship of love, love and gratitude towards God. And so our scriptures tell us that pick a particular form of God. It doesn't matter what it is. It can be the Krishna, it can be Jesus, it can be Buddha, it can be the Guru, it can be Guru Nanak. Whatever the form of Lord that I connect with and that I love, develop a feeling of love and gratitude. Get up in the morning and be thankful. Thank you, Lord, for another day. At the end of the day, thank you, Lord, for giving me a wonderful day, for giving me. So love and gratitude. And you can only love when you have a relationship with them, with a person or with a thing. So develop a relationship of love with God. I say, how do I develop a relationship of love with God? Who is this God? What is my relationship? So we say that there are 7 different ways you can relate. Because when you love something, the mind runs towards it. If I love something a lot, then my mind will run towards it. If I love money, then what will happen? Soon as I wake up, I'm checking the stock market. Okay, what happened to my stocks? So we say don't, when you wake up in the morning, don't do anything else. Maybe just brush your teeth, wash your face. Do not take a shower. Do not have breakfast. Do not have coffee. Do not open your newspaper. Do not open your phone. That's the worst thing you can do. Turn on the phone as soon as you wake up, because then your mind starts. So meditation should be the first activity I do as soon as I wake up. So what are the relationships we can develop with God? So one is a loving father or a loving mother. Of course, in Jesus, in Christianity, he's worshipped as the Father in heaven. But among Hindus, we have mother, like we have Mother Saraswati on the wall, the mother of the teacher. She's the goddess of knowledge, or Mother Durga, goddess of energy. So you can love God as a loving father or a loving mother. Another beautiful way is the loving master, and I am the servant. So the Lord is my master, and I am the servant. I am working for the Lord. Whatever the Lord wants, I am doing. There is no ego. There is no selfishness. I am a humble servant of God, and God is the one who has placed me here. So whatever I am doing is the God's work. And example we have in our Hindus is Hanumanji and Ramchandraji, the Lord, who his son, Hanumanji, even though he was a great, powerful, realized master, but he served the Lord humbly like a servant. So it does not mean that I am useless, but in fact, when I am a servant of the Lord is working through me, I become all powerful. See, if I am, it's like an ambassador, like an, if I am an ordinary individual, and then I become an ambassador of the United States, and I am an ambassador to Brazil, then what happens? I, as an ordinary individual, John Smith, now become an ambassador of the whole United States, the powerful country. So I get more power. So similarly, when I become an ambassador of God, I become all powerful. The third method to love God is that he's a creator. So the Lord is the creator, and whatever I have is God's gift. My body, my mind, my intellect, all my the objects, my house, my children, my things, my everything that I have is God's gift. So God is the creator, and whatever I have is God's gift. So then you develop an attitude of gratitude. Lord, thank you for everything you have given me. And I am so thankful that I am able to have what I have, and let me use my gifts and abilities to serve God. The fourth example is Lord is a guru or as a teacher. And here we see the Bhagavad Gita. Some of you come to the Sunday class. Sunday we have a Bhagavad Gita class at 11. And we are covering the Bhagavad Gita where we are in the second chapter. And there the Lord Krishna is the teacher, guru, and Arjuna is the student. And so if you're welcome to come here Sunday at 11, we do the Bhagavad Gita. So God can be a teacher. Like in Bible, he says, you know, he sent his son to give us the message. So God comes as the teacher, as Christ or as Krishna. Then God can be a friend. A lot of people relate to God as a friend. In our Arjuna was God's friend. Not only he was a student, but he was a friend. And then we have a story of Krishna who had a friend called Sudama. And that's a long story. I won't go into it. But you can relate to God as a friend. And develop a relationship with God, not of fear. See, we always say you should fear God, you should be afraid of God. No, you need to have love for God, have gratitude. What you should fear is your karmas. If I have done good karmas, I'll get good results. If I have done bad karmas, I'll get bad results. So when I am suffering or when I am being punished, it is not God who is sitting up there somewhere and punishing me. It is my own good and bad karmas that are coming as good and bad results. So do not fear God, but love God, but fear your karmas. I can do karmas with my hand. I can slap somebody or shoot somebody with a gun. I can do bad karmas with my speech. I can speak angrily, be negative. Or even negative karmas are with thought, if I get angry or I think negative. So one has to be very alert. So fear your karmas. Do not fear God. God is all love and compassion. Then for ladies, a lot of people worship or love God as a child. So a lot of in Hindu homes, you know, they will have the little Krishna whom they will bathe and they will change his clothes. Or during Christmas, we see the nativity scenes where they have the baby Jesus in the cradle, and there is the Mother Mary, and then, you know, we worship God as a child. So you can develop a relationship of love with God as a child. And then the last one is God is my beloved. God is my, like Mirabai, you know, in our scriptures, we said this in our stories. She was a queen, but she gave up her whole kingdom because she said, I'm married to Krishna. I love Krishna. So she didn't care what her husband said, what her father-in-law said. Her father-in-law was the king. Her husband was the prince. But she left all that and just wanted to go because for her, nothing in the kingdom mattered. Only thing mattered was Krishna. And in Christianity, the nuns, if you lot of them, when you ask them, They say, I'm married to Jesus. So the idea is the same, that they have given up the world, put on these white clothes, and they have no more connection with their family. They're not married. They have no husband. They have no children. So these are the six relationships. So pick one of them, or you can pick more than one, but love God and have gratitude. Do not fear God. So these are the seven methods with which you can relate to God. So pick one of those. And for me personally, I find the friend is that I feel that God is my friend. And I, from childhood, I used to feel that God is my friend. He will take care of me. He will help me. So then you don't fear. You don't need to fear your friend, right? With your friend, you can talk anytime. So that's how I feel. Of course, all the other also are there. He's a loving master. He's a creator. He's my teacher. Whatever I have is because of the Lord. All those. But this, for me, I relate with the most. And each one of us can pick one or all methods of love and relating to God. And that's what they say. When you turn your mind towards God in love, then such a mind becomes pure, becomes quiet, becomes introvert. And ultimately, the most important thing in meditation is be a witness. Unattached witness. When my mind is running, I just watch it. And as I watch it, slowly the mind gets quiet and controlled. And give up this I and mine. And just turn the mind inward. And be very alert in meditation. So this is a brief summary. Swamiji, of course, has done a beautiful job. I don't think I was able to cover it the way he has. I tried to give some other ideas, but please read the chapter. In fact, read the whole book again. It's a very, very beautiful book. But this 29th chapter is a masterpiece, the language and all that. So please read it at home. Any questions, any comments?
I'm unhappy. I can make other people unhappy. That's the one I really caught my mind.
Very good. Yes. Thank you. Yes. Now that's true. But God does love everybody. And whatever I have is God's gift to me. So I have to reciprocate that love. Exactly. I agree with you.
It's gravity. I mean, it's a force that can't mm-hmm. be denied.
It cannot. There's a very beautiful phrase the master says. He says, turn your mind in devotion to the Lord. He will purify it and return it back to you. So when you turn your mind in devotion and love to God, then your mind automatically becomes pure. You cannot have an impure thought when you're thinking of God. And pick one of these or two of these relationships. I think that's very important. Connect with God with a particular relationship. And you will find that your love will increase. And whichever one suits you best, maybe more than one. But that's very important. We have to have a connection with God. God is not somebody sitting way up there watching over me and, you know, punishing me. And no, God is in me. God is love. God is compassion. God is... And then once I cannot say I love God and then I hate people, because everybody is God's creation. Even a criminal, even a child molester, even a rapist, even whoever it is, evil, it's still they're all God's creation. And they all have God in them. Yes, if somebody commits a crime, they need to be disciplined. They need to be punished. But inside, I should not have hatred for anybody. Because if I'm hating anybody, I'm hating myself. Because God is in me and God is in them. We are all that one. So in my heart, remove the word called hatred and anger. Reduce those two and substitute with love and compassion. But thank you.
Sometimes they say why the bad thing happens to the good people. Is it maybe because of their bad karma and they have to go through? Or?
Yes. Whatever is happening to me, see, there is a past accumulation of karmas, not only in this life, but in multiple lifetimes. A lot of people don't believe in that. But if something is bad is happening, like my father used to say, he built a cancer hospital, and there is a six-month-old child with leukemia, you know, who's getting blood transfusions, getting injections, getting chemo at 6 months. Now, what karmas has this child done? Is this God who is punishing this child? No, unfortunately, this child is undergoing the consequences of its previous karmas. It does not mean you don't take care of the child or love the child. Do what you can. But inside you know that there is not an imperfect or unjust God who is punishing this poor six-month-old child who has not done any karmas. What karmas can a six-month-old child do? So if anything bad is happening to me, it is happening as a result of my bad karmas. If anything good is happening to me, it is a result of my good karmas. So take everything that is happening, whether it's, it may be my husband, maybe my child, maybe my boss, maybe the weather, maybe the situation, maybe my health. Maybe my health is not good, but whatever is happening to me is a result of my karmas. My health is not good. Maybe I didn't take care of my body. Maybe I didn't eat right. Maybe I didn't exercise. Maybe I didn't go to the doctor, didn't control my diabetes, or somebody's born with a, you know, mental or a physical deformity. I know it's very sad, but it has to be from previous karmas that a child is born with physical or mental deformities. So that is, so your question is right. Yes, whatever is happening is because of the karmas. The law of karma is very powerful. What is in my hand is the present. I can fix my present karma so that my future is good. My present is maybe not very good because of my past karmas, which I cannot change, whatever I did in previous life or in this life, but I can do what is good right now so that my future will be good. So that is in my hand. You had a question or comment? Yes.
The irony in all of this is,
yes,
that the extremely bad, painful karmas often lead you to that.
Yes.
Because you're so, you realize that these things are very hard, and I've had, you know, I have very heavy body karma this life. I have very heavy stuff with family.
Yes.
Yet, if I had not been so almost miserable, I would have not gone to that.
True.
And so then you go, you could even be grateful for some of these things that are hard.
Yes.
Well, and then you realize they're not so difficult.
Right.
You realize it's
right.
Not.
Eckhart Tolle says that in his book. Next week we'll be talking about living in the present, but he talks about that. And another example that again the guru gives us, that we are all in this hospital, all of us, and we are here. Otherwise we would be angels, we would be with God. The reason we are here, because we have vasanas, we have tendencies. So in the hospital, a doctor will give different treatment to different people. So if a person has a very mild illness, he'll just say, okay, go home, take this cold medicine, you'll get better. He just has a simple flu. But if he has a pneumonia, he'll say, okay, take this antibiotic by mouth. But if the pneumonia is really bad or he has a bad infection, he'll say, I need to put you in the hospital, give you IV antibiotics for a week. Another patient has a ruptured appendix. He cannot give him antibiotics. He says, I have to cut open your stomach, take out your appendix, take care of the infection. Another has a fractured leg and multiple fractures. He's put up there, hung up with surgery for 2 months or 3 months. Now the guy who is up with the, you know, in the leg for 3 months, another one who has had surgery, they say, this doctor is so unfair. Look, he has put my leg up for 3 months and he says, my doctor has cut my stomach, and look at the other guy, he just gave him pills and sent him home. No, the doctor is not unjust. He's not punishing one or serving the other. What the right medicine the individual needs, he is giving. Whether they need surgery, whether they need IVs, whether they need oral. So similarly, another way of looking at sorrow, which I admire you to do that, is that we are here in this hospital and there is a divine doctor, the Lord, who gives us the right amount of medicine that we need. And so sorrow can be a wonderful portal to a spiritual unfoldment. I 100% agree with you. And some people, when they get sorrow, they say, oh, why is God so bad? He's punishing me. Other person look at it as an avenue to growth. So that's very great. Thank you.
No,
it's very nice.
I seem to, some people think that there can't be a God because they think it's, you know, a laundry list of getting everything you want. And
yes.
And they
stay steeped in the misery, but realize I never thought that life was horrible.
Right.
Or something that was always in there that knew that. That
good.
It was still difficult. But.
It's true. Very true. No, that's a very good point. A lot of thinkers believe that. That sorrow is a portal to enter the truth. Because once you have so much misery, then you say, I do not want anything to do with this body, this mind. It's giving me so much sorrow. And I do not want anything with this world. I want to turn to God. So yes, that's an excellent point. Thank you all for everybody for their contributions. Anything else? Okay, today we'll meditate on Om, but we'll start with some simple breathing, which I think most of us know how to do. But put your finger above your nose, and with the thumb you control the right nostril, and with the ring finger you control the left nostril. So close the right nostril and breathe slowly deep in and out. So left nostril, deep in and out. Here we'll do it 5 times. At home, I like to do it about 9 or 11 times. Now close the left nostril and breathe 5 times, slow and deep. Through the right nostril, in and out. Slow, deep, and pay attention to the gap between the inspiration and the expiration. Breathe in, pause. Breathe out, pause. Now breathe in through the right, breathe out through the left. Breathe in through the left, pause, breathe out through the right. So keep on alternating, in through one and out through the other. Pay attention to the gap between the inspiration and the expiration. And just put the lights off, just press the square buttons and just sit in silence. Consciously relax the body from head to toe. your hands in your lap or on your knees. Relax every part of the body, from head to toe and toe to the head. Take slow, deep breaths, full attention on the breath. I'm aware of nothing but my breath. Be aware of the mind. Watch the mind as a witness. The moment it wanders, bring it back and center it in the body. Let the mind not go anywhere except here in this body. Let us practice that for a few minutes.